Oh, wait. If I'm going as far as robots, can't I go with Megazord?
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 371, recorded on December 5th, 2014.
Hello, and welcome to the 371st edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 204th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes gaming history.
All right. This podcast is going to be a little short because I have to be somewhere else very soon. Just a medical emergency in my family. And,
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, it's no longer an emergency, just a condition now. Let me put it that way.
Ah, okay.
So, but we will have this podcast, and we're going to have another cartoon-based gaming history again.
Fantastic.
So anyways, we're going
to
just...
I am very, very excited to hear if our listeners did as I requested and actually watched at least one episode of the Zelda cartoon. Don't ruin the surprise for me, because I want to get through the podcast. Don't ruin it.
Anyways, what have you been playing, Paul?
You know what? I have been playing a lot of Dungeon Keeper on iOS because they did something fantastically smart and gave everybody a premium upgrade for free for 3 days.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
So, I mean, I have been attacking other players every 45 minutes like clockwork for almost every hour that I'm awake. Well, you know, because it's the holidays. You know, you need to spread a little mirth.
As for me, I've been playing a lot of Halo Collection. And the reason for that is because I got myself a 4K television.
Oh, fancy schmancy.
And here's the funny part. I was watching Futurama on Netflix through the 4K television.
Right.
And it completely changed Futurama in some ways. It was like watching a theatrical version because it upscales everything. So it was in 4K, upgraded from HD. And it also auto-smooths movement. So I had really smooth movement that was almost unnatural. You know?
Oh, but did it look funny like it does, like they did when they did it on The Hobbit where it just looked super fast and weird?
Maybe. I didn't see The Hobbit, but I know what you mean. It wasn't that weird. It was just surprisingly smooth. Let me put it that way. It didn't surpass my, you know, it wasn't at 40 frame, you know, it wasn't at 40, oh, whatever, it's 48 frames per minute. That isn't the case. It's just that at 40, it's at 60 frames per second, you know, not 40, you know. Let's just say it just looked really weird. And it also added auto depth, which means scenes that have more depth to them than they used to. In other words, when things move, sort of like have a slight parallax, and it's sort of, you're like, whoa, what's going on? It was like watching the movie version of Futurama from episodes that I already had. So that was interesting. I wonder what would happen if I saw something that was like a really old cartoon, like the Flintstones, you know? Just this.
I shudder to think of what that would do to...
Or Zelda.
To 70-year-old animation.
Or Zelda, which is 30-year-old animation.
It's not 30 years 35. Old. The franchise is only 25.
No, 25, yeah. Because it was in the... anyways, we're going to find out all about that later on. Anyways, we're going to go straight to game news. Destiny's PvP mode now breaks up teams if they're too good. And this comes to us from Eurogamer. Destiny's player versus player modes have been refreshed with a new set of rules that dissolve match-made teams which are vastly outperforming opponents. Bungie introduced the new slaughter rules, which are now live in last night's weekly update blog post. In case of a massacre, all parties are returned to orbit at the conclusion of the match, designer Lars Bakken noted. In team-based playlists, this means if that one team is grossly overperforming the session, it'll be dissolved in favor of new matchmaking. In Rumble playlists, Destiny's version of Deathmatch, if three or more players are grossly underperforming, the session is again dissolved in favor of matchmaking. This latter change may help players stuck in matches where several of their team are no longer playing. In other words, they're not even bothering with teamwork. Destiny offers random rewards at the end of each match to all players, regardless of performance, something which has led to nefarious users to log in and simply wait in for good loot to drop, which explains why they have those slaughter rolls. Bungie will also return its limited-time salvage and combined arms modes, which see players fighting the Sierra Relics and clashing with higher numbers of vehicles and heavy weapons. When Destiny's The Dark Below expansion launches next week, Bungie will also introduce separate plays just for players with the add-on for three new maps. In other words, they'll just play the new maps instead of the old maps. So, yeah, I mean, on first glance, you know, it may seem a little bit, you know, like, oh, just because one team is killing everybody else, they have to be broken up. But I can see where if people aren't even playing because they just want the drop at the end of the match, I can see where people might get frustrated if their team isn't playing and the other team is.
Well, aside from that, it's more like, you know, if you're running a live product with multiple people, you need to make sure everybody's having fun. And nobody likes to get their ass handed to them all the time. You know, come on.
Yeah.
It's not so much about competing to be the best. This is what we're doing with our leisure time to distract us from the fact that we all work for a living or go to school for a living.
So, you know, those exploits can be really, you know, people just sitting in the thing and doing nothing, you know, just because they know they're going to get some free swag at the end of the match.
Right.
You know, why not have it if the player's character does not move, don't give them anything. You know, or there's minimal input. You know, you actually have to run a certain amount and fire your weapon a certain amount so that at least, you know, you're just bad. You're not just doing nothing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about trying to make sure we're all having a good time and not making it unfair, because that's not fun.
Okay, I'm putting on pause. Hold on. Okay, go ahead. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Xbox One sold over 720,000 Black Friday week in the U.S. And this comes to us from VG Charts?
Charts with VG a Z. Charts. With a Z, yeah.
VG Charts with a Z.
Because Zs are cooler than S's.
Of course they are. Microsoft has done everything it could to win this holiday in the U.S. with a $50 price cut on all SKUs and bundles for the Xbox One. Some retailers even had bundles selling for as low as $329. The Xbox One managed to sell over 721,000 units Black Friday week in the U.S. for the week ending November 29th, according to VG Charts. That makes it the best-selling console for the week in the U.S., outselling its main rivals, the PlayStation 4 and Wii U. The Xbox One sales for Black Friday week have set new records in the U.S., The console sold more units in its second Black Friday week than any other console in history. It is also one of the best-selling consoles on Black Friday week in the U.S. To compare, the original Wii, sold 383,000 units on its second Black Friday week back in 2007 and is nearly on par with what the Wii sold in its peak year in 2008.
You know, to be fair, I think there weren't many Wiis available that week, if I remember correctly. It was a heavy shortage.
Absolutely. People were flocking to the stores in droves to get their hands on that thing.
You know, the moral of the story is that if you lower the price on your console, people will buy it.
Yeah, I mean, this is what we've been saying all along. And, you know, quite frankly, I'm not really seeing this as good news. I'm seeing it, hopefully, as a lesson learned to Sony that they missed the mark with their original pricing structure, which is why they're in second place.
But the thing is that, you know, Microsoft is looking less at, you know, at the price of what they're being sold and at the number, because people who own consoles tend to buy games for them, you know, and that's what they want, is that you have to increase that user install base. And, you know, with Halo starting to make its rounds, I mean, Halo is basically what Mario is to Nintendo. You know, when you release a new Halo game, the consoles sell, you know. And there's also that promise of having the Halo 5 beta in like 2 weeks or so. So, you know, people are Halo crazy on the Xbox One. They were waiting for an excuse to buy one, I guess. You know, if you're gonna find one for $329, why not?
Absolutely. And you know what? It's not really hardware, you know, sales itself that keep companies moving. It's having enough players that already have the hardware to making a new game for it a profitable venture, for not only for themselves, but for their third-party developers as well. So, I mean, it's like, take a loss on your freaking console if you're doing that badly.
Or just remove the Kinect, which is why some of those prices are so low. I mean, I love my Kinect, but, you know, I would have bought my Xbox One with a Kinect, but that would have been my choice. You know, people didn't have a choice in the matter, and I think that's what they have to their understanding now. I mean, what would have been nice is if they had the voice command built in. You know, I think people really love – people mostly use their Kinect for vocally commanding their Xbox One. I mean, they don't do many games, you know, that use Kinect.
I think it just kind of is another example of, you know, the power of the free market and, you know, free market marketplace. You know, people will buy what they want, not what you tell them to buy. In most cases, people didn't want, you know, a Kinect with their Xbox, so they waited until it was removed and the price was dropped to go out and get one. It really just comes down to that. I don't see. I think my main difference here is I don't see this as a major victory for Microsoft. I'm seeing it more as like the correction of an initial mistake.
Well, my opinion is similar. I see it as a necessity. I think that's similar. I mean, spiritual.
Similar.
Yeah.
I still kind of think that Microsoft probably has the second largest share of the market right now. I think Sony's still ahead.
Well, you know, the thing about that is that's sort of a, you know, the share of the market is okay. It's only good for bragging rights, really, because all a console really needs is enough people who are going to buy stuff for it.
Oh, exactly.
Know? I mean,
and console buyers overlap.
I mean, say, you know, people who own a Wii U, you know, Nintendo's not going to stop making Wii U games because it's in third this time around. You know, no, they don't care about that. What they do care about is getting, is producing for the people who do own Wii Us. You know, so the same thing with PlayStation 4, same thing with Xbox One. You know, you don't worry about the people you don't have if you're, you know, for the most part. I mean, you're trying to get new people, yes, but I'm just saying, you know, people who actually own the console, their main concern is just having stuff to play on it.
Oh, absolutely. And most of the time, to most players, they're not even really directly competing with one another. You know, just because some days you feel like playing a Wii U doesn't mean that on other days you won't feel like playing an Xbox One. You know, it's all, you know, because they offer such vastly different game playing experiences, it's not like back when we were younger in the console wars of the 90s. You know, where you basically had enough money to buy either a Nintendo or a Sega.
Sega does what Nintendo don't. You know.
Yeah, I mean, like, but that was because you begged to get $150 to buy one of those things, and you only ever won that argument once. So it's like
well, once every few years, anyway. Like once every 5 years. You know,
right.
But by that time, you're able to afford your own, really.
Right, but it was more unheard of for somebody to have both back when we were kids and teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was either an Atari 2600 or an Intellivision for me.
Right, or a ColecoVision, or a Nintendo, Sega. Wait, like you didn't have all of them the way people do today.
I did own a ColecoVision and a Nintendo, so there's that.
Well, yeah, but they're different generations. So you plus you're old, so
stop it.
You probably just saved your ColecoVision from launch day.
Had the what's it called? My ColecoVision had the add-on which allowed me to play Atari 2600 games anyway.
You were staying there for you know to get your ColecoVision on launch day. That's funny. I'm amusing myself today.
What was the ColecoVision launch? I gotta look that up. Anyways, go ahead and read the next item.
No, I just read the last one.
Oh, that's right.
I will if you want to keep a particular surprise going.
It was launched in 1982, August of 82.
Hmm. So you were there with your little teenage friends?
I was 12 years old. I was just 12 because my birthday is in late July. I wonder if I...
So you bought yourself a ColecoVision for your 30th birthday? Is that what you're telling me?
Oh, wait. You know, I did get a launch ColecoVision. Yes, I did. I remember now. Yeah. What's the matter? It had the best Super Mario. I mean, it had the best Donkey Kong. It came with...
Right, because you needed something to play in your dorm room in college.
Well, if I was in college when I was 12, where's my friggin' money?
Oh, Jonah, you lie.
I'm teasing you
about your age, but I've grown tired of the joke now because you're not getting it.
Anyways, Godzilla the Game coming to North America this summer, and this comes to us from DualShockers. Bandai Namco's Godzilla PS3 game will be heading to North America sometime this summer. The only information that was given about the game is it will be shown at the Game Awards show tonight at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Fans will be waiting a pretty long time for Godzilla to localize, especially since Japan's release is around the corner. And in the meantime, though, fans could easily make a Japanese PSN account to play the demo that was released just yesterday. So, if the tagline for it is anger management, so I guess you're going to be playing as Godzilla.
Fair enough. I just kind of think that it's not particularly the most relevant news I've heard this month.
It's a game. Come on.
Well, yeah. It's a game release coming to America, but as companies are announcing that they're beginning to investigate not having region-locked games anymore, and that we're all taking more of a global view of gaming as it becomes more a part of pop culture.
You know, but there is.
I think that we will be hearing less and less of these stories.
Yeah, well, so if it's for PlayStation 3, although I'm pretty sure, you know, that Bandai Namco is going to multi-platform it. As a matter of fact, you know, I'm willing to bet you that if this is multi-platform, it's going to be a digital $20 game on Xbox Live Arcade, PSN, basically. But you know what? I remember my big monster games from way back when, like Mail Order Monsters and Crush Crumble and Chomp, or even...
You mean back when you were racing dinosaurs?
Okay. But don't you love games that have you just destroy things?
Yes, I remember playing the original Rampage, in which you played as either Godzilla or the giant monkey, and you destroyed buildings. Yeah, Godzilla and the giant monkey.
And a lizard. And if you
that was Rampage 2.
Well, here's the thing. The lizard was a girl, by the way, because when you got killed, you shrunk back into your original form. Of course, if someone else was playing with you, they could eat you then. It was sort of like Joust, though. That was simply not done unless you really didn't like that person, you know, to eat the other player. It was sort of like destroying the other player's egg in Joust.
Fair enough.
But you didn't play any other? You just played Rampage? That's it?
I was just mentioning Rampage. I don't think I played Joust until I got to grad school.
Yeah, I'm talking about big monster games, though. You never played any of those?
Not really my thing.
Because there's something to be said just having a game which you just run around and destroy stuff, you know?
You know what? That is part of the appeal of the Lego games, I've got to say.
Ah, so but you also build in the Lego games, too.
Right, but the fact, you know, the endless feeling of things just shattering apart is a very enjoyable tactile sensation.
Yes, you love capturing studs.
Hi-oh!
Hey, you know, it's not my fault. They're called studs in the game, so what can I say?
Hey, you know what? If that's what the Lego company decides that they should be called, then we'll just honor that.
Well, you know, well, technically they are studs because studs are a construction term, right? But still, you have a little kid playing to capture studs, to build stuff. Anyways.
I prefer thinking of them as bits.
Oh, you like to grab bits too?
Always. Uh-huh. But did you see the new Hershey's commercial that lets you know that one square on a Hershey bar is officially known as a pip?
A pip?
A pip. Why does the world need to know this?
You know, but the thing is that aren't pips little studs that you put on your shoulder to indicate your rank?
No, those are epaulets.
No, they're pips. I'm not talking about epaulets. Those are something completely different. On Star Trek, they call them pips as well. You know, they call them little...
Oh, on their collar.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, the pips on the collar. You know, what's it called? I mean, pips are basically marks.
Yeah. We have a lot of weird names for things.
I guess. But, you know, does it come with any Gladys Knights? Well, yeah, pips. What about Gladys Knights?
Moving on.
No.
No, she's on her own. She's going solo.
Next item, Paul.
Street Fighter V revealed as a PS4 and PC exclusive, and this comes to us from GameSpot. One of PlayStation Experience's announcements has arrived a little early as Capcom Today posted a teaser trailer for Street Fighter V, coming exclusively to PlayStation 4 and PC. The teaser was quickly pulled. Street Fighter producer Oshirano Oni...
Oh,
Ono?
No, you got that. Yoshinori Ono.
Hey, isn't that what I said, Yoshinori Ono?
No, you didn't.
Yes, it is. I think
you said
Adele
Tanzine. That's what you said.
I beg to differ. If you go back, if you check the tape,
I can check the tape, but you said Adele Mamzine.
You know what? That's going to be my new thing. Anytime I can't pronounce a name, I'm just going to use Adele Dazeem instead. She's coming to Los Angeles next Halloween. Tickets are already on sale as of today. Street Fighter producer Yoshirino Ono is in Las Vegas for PlayStation Experience and knows it. And it now appears we know why. According to prior comments from Ono, Street Fighter V is still in the early stages of development. He also assures fans that the fighting game will not be, quote, pay to win. The most recent core Street Fighter game was 2009's Street Fighter IV for the Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and PC.
You know, I don't know much about that pay to win. It sounds like maybe they DLC made your character better, you know, and easier to fight people. So those of you who play Street Fighter, let us know what if why he has to warn people that it's not going to be pay to win. You know.
And you know what? Again, there's nothing wrong with that as long as we segregate out a special area for people who have absolutely no downloadable content, so that there's one place where we're all on equal footing.
Well, that's what they do with cars. You know, they have the Class A, the Class B, the Class C. You know, I mean.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. If you love Street Fighter so much that you want to download, you know, every character and every power up.
Well, it isn't that it's character. I think it's power ups or stuff like that. Not you know well, like
whatever. I know what you're saying. I'm tying it back to my experience with Injustice. You know, Batgirl was really powerful when she came out as DLC.
I have not. You know, I played Injustice, but only the quick single player mode. You know, I rented the game and I enjoyed it. You know, I never really got deep into it. You know, I might get it at some point.
My point being, if you have, you know, an MMO or an MOBA, you know, massively online battle arena, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with having just different rooms set up so that people can play according to their skill level, according to their financial investment, according to whatever they find fun.
Well, here's a question for you. Which Batgirl is it in Injustice? Is it Barbara Gordon? Is it Cassandra Cain? Is it?
It's Barbara Gordon.
Okay. Okay. It's important that we figure that I know this. That...
Yes, because everything about Batgirl is subject to scrutiny.
Well, for one thing, Barbara Gordon can either be Batgirl or Oracle, depending on, you know, which side.
No, it's Barbara Gordon. It's Barbara Gordon Batgirl.
I heard there was a huge outcry about Cassandra Cain in the past few years. I only know this from Linkara.
Is that not Batwoman, the lesbian?
No, you know, that's Cain with a K-A-N-E. Cassandra Cain is someone different than that Batwoman. And she was extremely well-written. And, of course, since it was well-written, DC had to screw with her and, you know. Anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback. And this one comes to us from Alpha Shard. A great nostalgic episode. I do enjoy gaming flashbacks. Keep them coming, which we intend to. At Nintendo Game Boy Emulation. I do hope this means they'll port more of their games to other platforms. I do remember the Bleem emulator for Sony games, but that ended up getting sued for it. As for Nintendo, I can only hope this will lead to more access to their games legally. While we're on the subject of Nintendo, I was thinking that we could have it explored more of the Greco-Roman games, not just the Kid Icarus games, but also Battle for Olympus, another side-scrolling game from NES days. They seem afraid to try to push new IPs and just stick with their tried-and-true ones, which I think will make them tend to feel stale. When Paul was discussing the end of the Zelda cartoon and how Link and Zelda had to team up to find her father, I thought, well, that would be a fine game right there. You know, that would be nice to have a co-op Zelda game.
Yeah, they always seem to kind of miss the mark on that.
Yeah. At EA, I guess they can't be all that bad if they really are equal treatment. They have had a long history of games with LGBT relationship options. Remember in The Sims 2, there was apparently hidden stats you had to use an external program to see. One of these stats was a person's attractance tendencies, a score for both male and female, whichever ranked higher the character tended toward. I just thought it was neat that they went to this extent to make the character unique and even a little beyond your control. Now, the problem with The Sims 2, was it The Sims 2? Maybe it was The Sims, was that everybody was bisexual and everybody was having sex with each other. And they changed it so that they had initial tendencies, but if you had them going to a different sex, their tendencies would go to what the player was using them for. You know, so they had an initial sexuality, but it would mold. It would bend to whatever the player had them do. So
right, but I mean, they didn't put any more time making it any more rigid than their, you know, hunger. They just simply didn't have a decay one way or the other.
Right. At Sony Settles, I do remember those ads, and I was tempted by them. Boy, I would have been pissed to find out that I had to buy the game twice. I thought that the whole point was that any game bought on the main PS3 could be transferred and played on the Vita. At the question of the week, I start my shopping in November, but not on Black Friday or Cyber Monday. So there
you go. Good to know. You know, speaking of which, while we are on listening feedback, I thought I'd take just a second to call out our friend Ralph Jensen, R-A-L-F, contacted me on Facebook the other day, and he said that he did not know how he could get in our comments. So, Jonah, take a second to let our listeners know how they can get their comments to us.
Well, here's the thing. You go to gamingpodcast.net, that's one way, and post to the comments. Now, here's the thing. If you're a new person, You have to be moderated once, so you won't see your a comment come on until someone says, okay, you're good to go.
And just so we're all clear, that someone is Jonah, not me.
And also you can do fans at gamingpodcast.net. Or you can post a comment on Facebook. We have the Facebook page. As a matter of fact, let me see if he did that, you know, because...
Oh, and we also have, you know, we also take comments on iTunes, don't we?
No, those are comments about the program, not comments on episodes.
Oh.
Yeah, if you want to rate us on iTunes, that'd be great too.
Yeah, rate us on iTunes.
Also, there's another weirder way. You can actually go to gamestooge.podbean.com. That is the other site where the episodes get posted. But I seldom ever get messages there because, you know, it's just basically the web host, you know. But you can post there if you wanted to.
Well, anyway, that was my good deed for the day.
Okay. So anyways, we're going back to gaming history. And this time, and I'll do this one because you'll be too – you'll want to react. The Super Mario Brothers Super Show.
Ba-dung, ba-dung, ba-dung. We should, you know what we should do? As long as we're doing cartoons, we should go and put like a sound clip from the beginning of the show in, so that people can get nostalgic with me as it plays in my head.
But the thing, last week I just did. Excuse me, princess.
Yes, but it wouldn't kill us to have the opening.
I guess.
It's the Triforce of Wisdom, right?
Anyways, The Super Mario Brothers Super Show is an American television series based upon Super Mario Brothers and Super Mario Brothers 2. It was originally broadcast via first-run syndication to mostly independent or Fox television stations from September 4, 1989 to December 1, 1989, with reruns continuing until September 6, 1991. The Family Channel picked up the series in September 23, 1991 and aired it until August 26, 1994. The show was produced by Deke Animation and was distributed by Viacom in association with Nintendo. DHX Media, the successor company of Cookie Jar Entertainment and Deke, is the current distributor. The first and last parts of each episode were live segments that showed Mario, played by WWE Hall of Famer Captain Lou Albano and Luigi Danny Wells, two Italian-American plumbers living in Brooklyn, where they would often be visited by celebrity guest stars. These parts were performed and filmed on a closed set, but with the use of canned laughter to simulate a studio audience. Some of the guest stars were popular television stars such as Nedra Voles. You know who Nedra Voles was, right?
See, here's my problem. I didn't know who any of these people were, even back then, let alone
Nedra
now.
Nedra Voles was the housekeeper that followed Mrs. Garrett on one... She was also not Clara Peller, who said, "Where's the beef?" But she was her friend. She was this little girl, a woman with a bun in her hair. Did you ever see the movie Lust in the Dust?
No, but I think there's more interesting guest stars.
Norman Fell, who was basically Mr. Roper. Donna Douglas, Eve Plum, Vanna White, Jim Lang... You didn't know who Vanna White was? Really?
I was five.
Vanna White? Come on. And Eve Plum was on the Brady Bunch.
I was five.
Danica McKellar, Nicole Eggert, Claire Carey, and Brian Bonsall are professional athletes such as the late Lyle Alzado, Magic Johnson, and WWE Hall of Famers Rowdy Roddy Piper and Sergeant Slaughter.
I knew who Sergeant Slaughter was because he was on G.I. Joe.
He was also at New York Comic Con this year.
I'm just saying he was on G.I. Joe, so I knew who he was.
Okay. In one episode, Lou Albano played himself. In one episode, Lou Albano portrayed himself, forcing his regular character to leave the scene in order for himself to appear.
Yeah, it was very low budget. There was no CGI back in the day.
In the episode in question, pop star Cyndi Lauper states she was looking for Lou Albano because he's missing, due to the note she got from him. Now, for those of you who don't know, Cyndi Lauper and Lou Albano were good friends.
Oh, she's a good friend of our people.
He also appeared as her father in the She-Bop music video. You ever see that music video?
No. But it was like 30 years ago.
Cyndi Lauper, She-Bop, and you'll see Captain Lou playing her father. Because he's missing due to the note she got from him. Although it's important, there's an important part missing from the note. Mario exclaimed how much he wants to meet Lou, and later Lou himself appears while Mario is shopping for pizza. As a result, Luigi gets to meet Lou, but Mario does not. Lou Albano and Danny Wells also played female versions of themselves in drag, Marianne and Luigina, their cousins, and also two hillbilly cousins named Mario Joe and Luigi Bob.
It was wacky.
That's nothing compared to the cartoon itself. Each Mario Brothers cartoon served as the second segment of every show, following the introduction of the first few minutes of the episode's live-action segments. The cartoon featured characters and situations based upon the NES games from the two games, as well as several sound effects and music cues from the other two games. Each episode featured Mario, Luigi, Toad, and Princess Toadstool defending the Mushroom Kingdom from the reptilian villain King Koopa, often in a movie or pop culture parody. Getting into the spirit of these parodies, Koopa often used the used alter egos fitting the current theme. Now, I'm going to say something about the show. They were batshit crazy.
Oh my God, they're giant acid trips. Watch these things on YouTube or buy the DVDs. They're insane.
This is why drug use went down with kids. They didn't have to take drugs. All you had to do was watch the cartoon.
Oh my God, it was insane.
Wait, I was a college student and I felt like I was high after watching one of those episodes. Now, I didn't watch it much like you did, but you know, it was enough that I felt I was going to get diabetes from it. You know, it was that sugary sometimes. But
yeah, but you know, when you're five.
But again, you know, I guess they knew their audience. It's just
they knew their audience. As long as they made it relevant to our game experience, we would watch.
Yeah.
You know, when Mario got a yellow cape, he better have had a yellow cape on the cartoon too, or we'd know it was an old episode.
Mm. On every Friday episode of the Super Mario Brothers Superstore, a cartoon based on the Legend of Zelda video game series was featured instead of Super Mario Brothers cartoons. We covered this last week. So
yes, we did.
So we don't have to go into that too much.
I'm still telling all of our viewers to go. The episode is like 10 minutes long. Go and watch one on YouTube.
Yeah. In the 1991 season after the original animated series had ended, the Albano Wells live-action sequences were replaced on September 3rd, 1990 with a new continuity under the title Club Mario. This format featured extreme Mario-obsessed teenagers Tommy and Tammy Treehugger, along with cool MC commandeering the satellite signal of the Super Show using a satellite dish atop their apartment building, despite the reality of the show going out on tapes at stations well in advance. Goofing around in at least one episode, running around the Deke Studios and harassing Andy Hayward, who is also the show's executive producer. Now, for those of you who are millennials, who don't understand this, you know, people who are much younger than Paul, the 90s was very obsessed with extreme.
Everything had to be extreme. Skateboarding was like just made like a recognizable thing. The X Games became a thing back in the 90s. I mean, extreme was the word. If the 80s were awesome,
no,
the 90s
the 80s
were extreme.
Were super.
No, the 80s were awesome. The 90s were extreme.
I think it was the I think that was the California thing. Actually, because
You know what? I just remember when this...
Because in the West Coast, you know, they were, yeah, it was a skateboard culture, you know, a surfing culture, so I guess you would have, you know, stuff like Rad and Tubular and stuff like that for the 80s.
But I remember when this happened on the show, that's when I stopped watching it. Like, the tree huggers were just stupid. It was like, like, where's Mario and Luigi? I don't want to see these idiots.
They weren't fun stupid like Captain Lou. You know, they were...
No, they like, not at all. And it's like, why am I watching these non-Nintendo people that I don't care about? Bring back Mario and Luigi. I stopped watching. And then they got rid of them all together, and it just became, like, an hour of the backlogged Mario and Zelda cartoon.
Here's the thing is that, you know, I'm pretty sure that there was an executive decision, much like the episode Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie. That episode, you know,
I wouldn't be surprised if it was something about contract disputes either.
Well, not contract disputes, just how.
Well, for the actors,
make
yeah.
It more hip and totally radical, you know.
No, yeah, It wouldn't surprise me if Captain Lou wanted more money. I mean, Nintendo was blowing up in popularity. Mario was becoming the thing he is today.
Captain Lou was big at the time too, you know.
Yeah, and he was big at the time.
And
I don't just mean around the middle.
And an additional added segment was a 1 to 2 minute viewing of Space Scout Theater / Spaced Out Theater, hosted by Princess Centauri, a green alien woman, which was sourced and edited from the science fiction television series Photon. The segments had an unpopular reception, and further distribution of the series after the 1991 season solely featured the original cut of the show with the Albano Wells live action sequences. So they said,
It was really like they stuck a commercial in there for Photon, which was like this laser tag kind of competitor. Photon had its own show too, so they were trying to cross promote, but like, how much cross promoting can you do in a minute and a half?
Now, I never saw it because I'm not into it, but I heard that the Digimon movie had an opening segment from a really weird Fox show that they were trying to cross promote there that was just awful.
Yeah, I really hate you know, I understand how spin-offs work, but if the second product doesn't work, it just ruins the first one.
Yeah. So, anyways, our question of the week is, what is your favorite giant monster? Or if you want to be a total geek, kaiju. So, Paul, what is your favorite giant monster?
Godzilla.
Okay. So you go with a classic Godzilla.
Got to go with a classic. You can't go wrong. Or, you know, the upgrade Mecha Godzilla. Oh, wait. If I'm going as far as robots, can't I go with Megazord? I pick Megazord.
Go ahead. Morgazord.
I picked the original Megazord. There were dinosaurs and robots and ninjas. They were awesome. And then they moved on to Greek mythology, so that was even more awesome.
I'm going to have to go with, since I'm an MST3K fan, Gamera. Because Gamera is really neat, and Gamera is full of meat. We are eating Gamera. So you have to, yeah. If you're a fan of the show, you'll get that. You know, Gamera is really neat. Gamera is full of meat. We are eating Gamera. So, but Gamera's friend.
Yes, and thank you for that musical interlude.
Yeah, Gamera's friend to all children too. So you know Gamera, right?
No, Mickey is everybody's pal. Sorry.
Gamera's giant.
I'm putting a kibosh to that right now.
Gamera's the giant flying turtle. From the
Japanese that's monster. That's not a thing. That's not really a thing.
It is a thing.
That's not really a thing. You're just making that up.
Oh. So why Megazord and not, say, Voltron or...
Because Voltron got weird after they got the cool castle. Like, I liked it better when it was, like, this crumbly... Like, in the first five episodes, when it was this crumbly old castle that had, like, a giant computer room underneath.
Mm.
And as soon as it got... As soon as the new castle came along in the fourth or fifth episode, it was just like, meh, not my thing anymore.
Anyways, look for...
But no, Power Rangers. Power Rangers, definitely. The Megazord.
Okay. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. You enjoy your feedback. So leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum or send your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. Like I said, if you want to post comments, the fastest and easiest way is to at GamingPodcast.net. I wonder if people get confused and sometimes put GamingPodcast.com. You know, because this is .net, not .com.
You should go look at .com and see if it's available.
Yeah, well...
And make it a redirect so you don't have to redo all the programming.
I guess, but that would cost money, and I'm not going to...
It'd be like $7.
Yeah, it's going
to... Go to GoDaddy.com, dude.
Anyways, see us next week. And thanks.
Bonds.
You know, it's a nice short episode, less than 40 minutes, but you know...
Yeah, because, you know, it's the holiday season. We know everyone's busy, you know, including us.
Yeah.
So let's make it short and to the point.
Well, at least this week. Well, you know, I have a feeling that the episode's going to get really much longer in January. So anyway.
Well, that's January. That's after Christmas.
Yeah. So anyways, we'll see you next week.
Bye, Bonds. What? It's good advice.
Hey, paisanos, it's the Super Mario Brothers Super Show!
We're the Mario Brothers, and plumbing's our game. We're not like the others who get all the fame. If your sink is in trouble, you can call us on the double. We're faster than the others, you'll be hooked on the brothers. A treat, so hang on to your seat. Get ready for adventure and remarkable feats. You'll meet Koopas and Troopas, the princess and the others. Hanging with the plumbers, you'll be hooked on the brothers to the brim. The brothers!